Hello, I'm Caroline Valley.
And I'm Kate Valley.
And this is Friday Night at Blockbuster, the podcast about our favorite movies from the 2000s. Before we get into the movie this week, Kate, last week I laid down the biggest challenge I had given you yet. I gave you two movies to watch.
Yeah, it was a lot of movies this week.
It was a lot of movies. They were all quite long.
Yeah.
So before we get into the movie, I think the people want to know, what are your thoughts? What are your feelings on the two Westerns that I gave you?
So I watched The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Yep.
And then Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, in case people have forgotten.
Long movies, long titles.
Long movies, long titles. Lots of people that I probably should know, but didn't recognize. So we watched Butch Cassidy first, and you were actually here the night that we watched Butch Cassidy.
Yep.
Which is very unusual for us. I enjoyed that one. I really enjoyed that one. Maybe I'm a Paul Newman person now. I don't know. I'm interested to watch some of his other ones to see what else he does. I think as our mom said, he's easy on the eyes, so that doesn't hurt. But no, I enjoyed it. I would agree with your review in that I think I enjoyed the first half more. Once they kind of go down to
Bolivia.
It just had a different pace to it. It wasn't kind of the same setup of the story. And so, yeah, I think I enjoyed the first half more. I did enjoy their big shootout at the end of the movie, though. So, yeah, I think that one had a lot of pluses. The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, it just didn't grab me.
No. Nope.
It just, yeah. Maybe it was because I watched part of it last night and then finished it this morning. I don't know. But I wasn't kind of enthralled with it, but I loved its music.
Yeah.
So yeah. I loved the music. Every time it started up, I would just be like, okay, cool. Like something's going to happen in this scene now. So
I said last week that the first time I watched The Good, the Bad, the Ugly, like as soon as the theme music started for the credits, I was like, oh my God, it's that movie.
Yes.
I didn't really know what that movie was, but I knew that music.
Yeah.
And so was there a similar thing? Like, had you heard that music before?
Yeah, I've definitely heard that music before. And I think I've seen the last kind of couple of scenes. The big shootout, them at the cemetery. I think I've seen that before. And I think that's maybe why I thought I had seen the whole movie before. Because right. I must have seen the ending.
Right.
Either one time you were watching it or online or on TV or something. And so I felt like I had seen the whole movie because I had seen that last kind of couple of scenes.
10 minutes or... Yeah. Yeah. I think it's interesting, like, the music obviously is one of the standouts. Like,
it's so good.
Ennio Morricone has been on my top five listened to artists in my, like, Spotify Wrapped for, like,
oh, really?
8 straight years. Like, he is my favorite composer, full stop.
Oh,
like,
okay.
That, you know what I mean? Like, Beethoven, Mozart, Ennio Morricone. That's, like, you know what I mean? But it's a lot of it is this movie and the movies that he did with Sergio Leone. So like this is, depending on how you want to look at it, it's the third in the trilogy or it's the prequel in the trilogy.
Okay.
It's not a trilogy at all. You can kind of look at it a whole bunch of different ways.
Okay.
But like I think even though it's not my favorite of the Leone movies, I actually like the one that he did after this called Once Upon a Time in the West. That's my favorite.
Okay.
Sort of. That's my favorite Leone movie. That might be my favorite Western, sort of, again, full stop. I think it's hard to argue, as somebody who enjoys Westerns, that The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly is probably the peak. That's when they were all at the best of their best abilities.
Yeah.
But I can understand maybe where you're coming from that it didn't work for you, because I was kind of saying, like, it is definitely a pre-modern movie. Like,
yeah.
And there are slow parts. There are quiet parts. It's long.
It's long, which sometimes, and like I'm getting better with length of movies, but this one felt like a long movie.
Right.
Sometimes I watch a movie and I'm like, oh, wow, that flew by. And so like, that's fine. This one though, I felt the length of it. I enjoyed that it, and same with Butch Cassidy, kind of gave me a little bit more of like the stereotypical Western.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you have the bad guy dressed in dark clothes. Clint Eastwood in Good, Bad, the Ugly is the good guy. He tends to be in quite light clothing.
Can I just ask though, is he the good guy?
Because
he actually kills the most people in the movie. So like,
I was going to ask you how they each got their names.
Yeah, like I think there is no, like, from my take anyways, so there is no good guy in the movie.
Okay.
I think what the good, the bad, and the ugly are is like how they go about their business. So like Tuco is actually my favorite character in the movie. I fucking love Eli Wallach as Tuco. But his like the way that he goes about his business, the way that he sort of maneuvers around the scene, it's quote unquote ugly. Like he's not a hero. He's not, you know.
I think they call him the rat.
He's not dressed or styled in a way like Lee Van Cleef or Clint Eastwood, where it's sort of like, you know, they're clean cut and, you know, they look good and they look like movie stars. Eli Wallach looks a bit ragged.
Yeah.
So he's the ugly. I think Lee Van Cleef as the bad, the first scene that we see him in, he murders an entire family.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like, he's definitely the bad guy. Like, he's not above torturing people, all this sort of stuff. He's definitely the bad of this three. I think where Clint Eastwood gets the good is because he's, like, clean. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
The whole thing with him and Tuco where he goes into town and sort of hands Tuco over for the ransom money, but then frees Tuco so they can go to the next town and do it again. Like, that's like a clean
kind of scam.
Scam that he's got. You know what I mean? And like the way that he sort of wanders through problems and issues, like he always kind of keeps himself out of the dirty business, even though he's the one kind of committing all the dirty business.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think that's, it's that more so than like he's the good guy, he's the bad guy, and he's
the ugly something guy.
else. Yeah. So I think that's my take on it.
Yeah. I also did enjoy the use of the guns or whatever. So like the shooting off of hats and like all of that. So like those like little funny bits I enjoyed. So there were definitely parts I enjoyed of it, but the movie as a whole, I don't know.
Was tough.
I don't know if it'll warrant a rewatch. So
did the dubbing take you out of it? Like, did you eventually ease into that at all?
I did ease into it. I ended up watching it with subtitles, just because of watching it last night and this morning and kind of not having it super loud. So I ended up watching a lot of the subtitles, which then meant I didn't need to watch their lips. So I was fine with it.
I think just to go back to Butch Cassidy too.
Yeah.
I think we sort of had a brief conversation once the movie finished. I didn't really want to give too much away, but I think what I was saying, because our mom was there and she enjoys the movie as well, and she's a big Paul Newman fan as well. And we were sort of agreeing that like the first hour is where all the iconic stuff comes from. So all the scenes or the lines that people may have heard or may have seen referenced in hundreds of other things all come from the first hour. The second hour where they go to Bolivia, I still think is great. Like, I think this is a perfect movie. I think it was a 5-star movie. But I can understand where it's sort of like, once you get away from that high of the first hour, the Bolivia stuff may seem like a drop off.
Yeah.
What I would say with Butch Cassidy, it's an interesting movie because there's not really a bad guy in the movie. We're never really introduced to an antagonist.
No,
it's
mostly
about these two guys. And then Etta James as well is kind of tagging along for the fun. But like, there's no, like, there are people chasing them, but we never, ever really see the people chasing them. There are systems in place trying to capture them. Never really see them. You know what I mean? Like, there's not really a villain that you can point to and be like, oh, that's the bad guy. And like, I hope they beat him. So just like, we're just watching these guys hang out.
Yeah. You kind of just have the hope that they're going to get away.
Yeah. It won't be a challenge for next week. And I won't put this on your plate too soon.
Oh, I appreciate that.
I do wonder, like, with Butch Cassidy, did you enjoy Paul Newman and Robert Redford together?
Yeah. I could feel their chemistry. I could feel their, clearly, like, they've worked together. And I don't know if this is at the start of them working together or the end or was it the middle.
This was their first one, I think. I think they only did two movies together and this was the first one.
Oh, I kind of felt like they had more. But no, I enjoyed them together. So
So the one that you may want to check out then is called The Sting,
okay,
which they did together a few years later. And The Sting is, like, the way I would sort of break it down if you really wanted to, like, Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid is definitely about both of them, but Paul Newman is definitely the star. In The Sting, which is a few years later, it's, again, both of them, but Robert Redford is now the star.
Oh,
he's
nice.
The lead. He's the main guy driving the story forward.
So they kind of flipped.
They kind of flipped. But The Sting is all about con men, and it's all about them, you know, pulling grifts on other marks. And as somebody who likes a heist movie, as somebody who likes sort of that genre of movie, that may be more in your wheelhouse than Butch Cassidy, which is the Western. It's still, I think the Sting is set in like the 30s, like Depression era. Okay. So you still get that little bit of, like, there's the old cars and the old clothes and things like that.
But we're not out in the Wild West.
We're not out in the Wild West. They are, I think most of the movie takes place in Chicago, I think. And a train. There's a big long sequence on a train. But yeah, like, there's like poker games and gambling and con men and things like that. And so I think that may be more in your wheelhouse. That may be more in your sort of areas of interest than Butch Cassidy.
I'm willing to check that one out. I will say, between both movies, not one tumbleweed.
Which, was there not one tumbleweed?
I don't think there was one tumbleweed.
Although, the one thing I did want to ask you about The Good, Bad, and the Ugly, because I'm imagining that this is your first Leone movie.
I think so, yeah.
How did you find the way that he filmed faces? Because that's his big thing, is the face.
I really noticed it at the end. So, like, the big standoff.
Yeah.
Where the three of them are in the cemetery. And I enjoyed it in that case, because it is such a high pressure moment of, well, these three guys clearly don't trust each other. They all want the same thing. And so I was sitting there being like, are they all going to shoot, like, to their left and all get shot? Are they going to, was there an unspoken sign or something or emotion to be like, oh, we're going to target this guy or whatever? And so, like, I was curious at that. And I enjoyed that he cut between the faces a bunch of times.
Yeah.
Their faces and then their hands. Because it was only at that last moment where I noticed one of them was missing a fingertip.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so then I was trying to figure out, clearly that's the actor missing a fingertip. But I couldn't figure out whose finger it was.
I think it was Levon Cleef. I think it was, I think it was Angel Eyes.
Oh, okay.
The last scene is like classic. Like, if you want to study how to build tension, how to slowly, you know, increase the temperature on a scene, that's what you watch.
Yeah.
Because the way that he cuts everything together and then it gets quicker and quicker and quicker, and we build to the moment of a gunshot, it is quite literally perfect. Like, you cannot do better than what he did. But yeah, watching it the other night, I did not watch this with you, and watching it the other night, the first thing that we see is this, like, face just pop up into frame.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I'm going to have to ask her about faces, because Leone and filming faces in, like, extreme close-up
is, like, his thing.
That was, like, one of his things. That's one of his lasting sort of legacies.
So, between the two, is Butch Cassidy your favorite then?
Yeah, I would say I'd be more likely to rewatch Butch Cassidy.
Okay.
Especially because Good, the Bad, and the Ugly is not my favorite Leone movie. So, like, the other one, Once Upon a Time in the West, I think is a little bit longer. Not too much. I think it's maybe 15, 20 minutes longer. So if I'm going to watch a 3-hour Leone movie, I'm going to watch Once Upon a Time in the West.
Okay.
So in that sense, I'm probably more likely to rewatch Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid over The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. The Leone movie is probably a better made movie than Butch Cassidy, but, like, they're both 5 stars. They're both... You know, splitting hairs here. I'm really, really picking nits. But yeah, like, I don't know. Anything last to say on either movie or the Western genre in general? Or
I think after doing 3 Westerns quite close together,
pretty quickly,
I think a little break from Westerns would be nice.
So next week's movie, 310 to Yuma, we should probably push that.
Yeah, let's push that one out a few weeks.
We'll push that one down the road a little bit. Okay. We can move on to this week's movie, which maybe you don't know because you haven't watched necessarily the Kurosawa samurai movies.
Okay.
But the samurai legacy and the Western legacy are quite closely linked, actually. So, like, there is a world in which this could also be considered a Western.
Okay.
But we are going back to May 4th, 2004 to talk about Tom Cruise's movie, The Last Samurai. So, was this a first watch for you? I can't honestly remember.
Yeah. And once again, it's the poster that has always kind of come up on various things that I'm just like, I need to check that one out. But just...
Haven't. So, first viewing, how do you feel?
It was a really pretty movie.
Yeah. It looks incredible.
And I think because we watched Butch Cassidy first, having the 50-year difference between them, you are there being like, oh, okay, like, we've just, like, made cleaner-looking movies.
Well, yeah, they probably didn't shoot this on film, or the film that they shot it on was probably better, but,
and
yeah.
stuff, so, like, that also just helped it make it look cleaner and right. things yeah. like that. But the transition scenes, where it's just kind of a person's silhouette with, like, the sunset or whatever in the background, were just beautiful.
We picked this movie, or I picked this movie, because I've been watching Shogun, the new, I guess it's on Hulu, but up here it's Disney.
Yeah.
The new Disney movie.
And, show. Disney show.
Oh, yes, show. And Shogun, I think, is set about 200 years before The Last Samurai.
Okay.
Because Shogun is about sort of the Western world, I'm going to say discovered. They didn't discover it. It was already there. People were already there. But finding...
in their world.
Yeah, yeah. Finding Japan. And then The Last Samurai is obviously the Western world kind of exerting major influence onto Japan. And so, yeah, like just watching Shogun, I was like, oh, I think I need to rewatch The Last Samurai. And if I'm going to rewatch The Last Samurai, then I'm doing an episode on The Last Samurai.
We're going to make it an episode.
I'm not just going to watch it nilly, whatever. But yeah, I've like always loved this movie. I've always enjoyed it.
It was interesting. We've now done a few Tom Cruise movies, but I still have him as like Mission Impossible man in my head. So it was interesting to see him in this where like, he's not that.
He's a character. He's actually a character. Yeah.
Like, he...
he goes through development and change. Yeah, yeah. Wild things for a movie to have. But they do it.
But, so, like, that was really interesting for me to kind of see him, like I said, because he's just Mission Impossible to me now. Like, I don't even know what his... Ethan Hunt.
Yeah.
Like, it's just Mission Impossible to me. So.
But no, it's interesting because, like, this comes out in 2003, 2004. I think Collateral, which we've done, comes out in 2005.
Yeah.
If I can remember. And sort of like, that's kind of the last time that he plays characters. From there on out, he's basically playing himself in just increasingly more and more stunt-driven movies, which I love.
Yeah.
I love. And rewatch all the time. But it is nice to see him in this mode where you're sort of like, oh no, he can be an actor when he wants to be an actor.
He just wants to be a stunt person now.
He just wants to do the stunts now.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I think like his work here as Nathan Algren, like he's pretty good.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed kind of from the start when you first meet him and he's backstage and like clearly something is going on with him. You are there being like, so this is who we're following? This is our hero? This is the hero who is probably drunk, probably hungover, and about to do a presentation about guns? And you're just like, okay. And so I was intrigued to kind of see how we were getting to where we were going to be.
Right, right. My question on that scene, and much of the first sort of hour of this movie, is do you ever think Tom Cruise has actually been drunk in his life?
I think he's drunk all the time.
I don't think he takes a drop of alcohol.
No?
I don't think he lets that touch his lips.
Maybe not anymore, now that he's doing stunt work. He's got to have a clear head.
I don't think he's done that since... We don't need to get into his religious affiliations, but...
Oh, yes, that's true, I guess.
I genuinely... There are parts of Tom Cruise that show up in movies where you're sort of like, I don't think he's ever smoked a cigarette before, or I don't think he's ever... drank whiskey before.
Okay.
Not to say that this is unconvincing. I think it gets the point across. Like, you watch the first few scenes with him and all that sort of stuff. And yes, we obviously watch him take a lot of drinks.
Yeah.
But when he's not doing it, you can still see like, oh, he's definitely drunk right now. Or, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, but there is just part of me where it's sort of like, I don't think he's ever actually done this before. So I don't think he knows what a drunk person is actually like. I think he's just good at portraying drunk on screen.
Okay.
So we understand, okay, he's an alcoholic.
Yeah. I guess there's things I've seen online where they talk about the best way to play drunk is to play sober.
Play sober. Try to play sober.
Try to play sober because exactly. Clearly it's usually the drunk people who are trying to be like, no, I'm fine.
Yeah, though. Exactly. Exactly. So, yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
So we get sort of the early stuff with Tom Cruise in America. He very quickly gets hired to go over to Japan and train their army as the army tries to sort of modernize and westernize and, you know, incorporate guns and things like that. Was there ever a part, or were you kind of already on board with the fact that, like, we're not supposed to be cheering for the people that we're all meeting right now? Like, for the first, like, 35, 40 minutes, we only meet people that he, you know, we meet, like, Japanese businessmen and we meet, you know, the soldiers and things like that. So were you ever sort of being like, I'm going to have to, like, watch out for this guy. I hope this guy makes it. I hope he's okay. Or were you always just waiting for the point where the samurai show up to sort of be like, okay, that's who we're supposed to be cheering for?
I think in some way I was cheering for some of the army guys. Like, I think there's, I can't remember his name now. He kind of became Tom Cruise's, like, right-hand guy. Like, he was, like, a lieutenant or something.
Yeah.
And in one of the battles, he tells him to retreat, and you can kind of see him turn back that guy.
Yeah. He shows up at the end.
At the end. So I was there being like, oh, I think he is a good guy. So I want him to pull through.
Yeah.
And, like, you do feel bad for some of the army people because I think they say, like, they were all conscripted and they were farmers. So, like, they don't know how to hold a gun. No. They don't know how to put on a bayonet. They don't know how to shoot. And you are there being like, you guys are so out of your league about, like, I don't even know who you guys are facing, but you guys are clearly not ready for anything. And then they get shipped off to their first battle and you're there kind of being like, well, I hope they make it.
It is a pretty good scene when they show up and they're sort of like, Katsumoto, the samurai leader, has hit the railroad. We need you to go off and find him, kill him, do whatever. And Tom Cruise is like, they're not ready to go. Like, these guys are not prepared to fight. And then they have that scene where he just stands in the open field and tells one of the soldiers to shoot him.
Yeah.
And the soldier, A, gets like,
really flustered.
Freaked out.
Yeah.
Can't do it. And then when he does finally shoot this wide open target, he misses.
Yeah.
And you're sort of like, these guys, A, it doesn't matter who they're fighting. They're not ready to fight.
No.
And then Tom Cruise has that line. Nathan Algren has that line of like, the people that they're going to fight against have done nothing for 1,000 years except train in the arts of war. And you're like, the odds are stacked here. This is not a good look for the Japanese army.
That was also a really good kind of gun scene with him shooting various things. And like Nathan Algren, Tom Cruise clearly knows every time when he shoots, he knows where that bullet's going.
Yeah.
He knows to the millimeter exactly where that's going to happen. And so I enjoyed that scene between the two of them because you clearly have somebody who has gone through military. I think is he a captain?
He's
something.
Yes. Captain.
He's up there in the ranks.
A middle rank.
Yeah. A middle rank. I think his description. But so you have somebody who's gone through it and knows versus this guy who's been plucked out of his farm and handed a gun and been like, shoot.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We get to the first sort of big action set piece, action moment of the movie. And this I think is my favorite. There's a couple battle scenes, but this is, I think, my favorite battle scene in the movie.
Really?
Yeah. I just love the way that it's shot. It's all in like fog and it's in the woods and things like that. And I love the way that you like hear the samurai well before seeing them. And so you just like, there's this like rolling thunder coming. And you're sort of like, to your point with these poor guys who have been plucked out of little villages all over Japan, like I'd be shitting myself. Even though I'm holding a gun, which I know is like a superior weapon to what they're probably holding.
Yeah.
No way. There's no chance.
Because I think before they go into this, it is said or shared that, like, the samurais don't have guns. They don't use...
Yeah, they don't use any modern weapons.
They don't use any modern weapons. So they just have their blades and...
Bows and arrows.
Bows and arrows and things like that. So you are there being like, the people with the guns should win.
Yeah. If they were like, trained.
If they were trained, they should win. I enjoyed that scene because I can't remember who the guy is. I just remember he's Fitz from Scandal comes in and says to Tom Cruise's character, like, oh, we got to go to the back. And he's just like, I'll meet you there. And
this is his superior officer.
His superior officer has come and told him, like, we're not a part of this fight.
Bagley?
Or something?
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that?
Yeah.
We're not a part of this fight, so let's go. Like, we're here just to train them. And I just love that, like, Tom Cruise's character was just like, yeah, sure, and stays in the middle of the fight. And I was just like, no, I'm one of these guys. The person I was sad to see die so quickly was Billy Connolly.
Oh, he's fantastic.
Because
he's so fantastic.
He's one of those voices for me that I'll hear him in things and immediately be like, oh, I know that voice, but forget his name every time.
Right.
But I recognize the voice. And so when he first appears back in the States, wherever they were, and I heard that voice, I was like, oh, I know that guy. Like,
but he does the exact same thing in that battle scene as Tom Cruise does, where Tom Cruise is like, you need to go to the back. And he's like, fuck off. Like, I'm not leaving. So I think with him, the interesting thing was that you could tell that he's a bit of a, like, an action junkie. I think the Billy Connolly character enjoys the fighting.
Yes.
I think that's what he actually enjoys. Not to say that he's like a warmonger or anything like that. I think he just actually enjoys being on the ground with a gun, fighting who he's being paid to fight. And it sort of doesn't really matter to him.
Yeah, I know. And I think because he kind of brought Tom Cruise in, didn't he?
Well, I think the understanding is that he's like a friendly face.
Oh, okay.
Like if this Bagley guy, who we increasingly find out has sort of bad baggage with Tom Cruise's character, if he had approached him, Tom Cruise would have just told him, get the fuck out of my face. Or, you know what I mean? Like, it would have...
Clearly, something had happened in their past.
It was like a non-starter. Whereas the Billy Connolly character is a friendly face that could at least get him to the meeting with the two Japanese businessmen, Amura and his sort of right-hand man, and listen to the proposal.
Yeah.
And then I think the understanding was, once Nathan hears how much money they will pay him, he's not going to say no. But we just need to get him to the meeting. So I think that's where the Billy Connolly character sort of comes in. He's this friendly face that can maybe keep Tom Cruise on, like, at least sober enough that he can function. He also, like, you know, we get a little bit of insight from him being like, you know, Tom Cruise's character studies his opponents and like, will learn their language and will learn their tactics to make him better understand how to beat them. And that then obviously sets us up for after this fight scene, where the rest of the movie ends up going. Before we get there, though, one of the things I love about this battle scene in the woods, in the fog, is that it, within the battle scene, within sort of like how exciting and epic and all the that stuff is, I think you clearly see how the samurai live and fight, where like, that onrushing group on the horses, most of them must know that they're going to die.
Oh, yeah.
Like they know that the army is not that good yet, but they still have guns. And the guns can shoot them from far distances and kill them with one shot. And yet they're riding in anyways.
Yeah.
They push that line back, and the line retreats into another group of samurais who have come in from the rear. And so you see that, like, one, this group of guys are like selflessly probably on a suicide mission.
Yeah.
But that they're not all on a suicide mission. Like, they're not all just like running head first. There is some tactics. There is some strategy. There is,
yeah.
And I just loved, like, fuck, I love that. I think it's a great battle scene.
They, like, it would be a truly terrifying scene. Like, if you were one of those guys and all of these horses were running at you and they're in their armor.
Yeah.
Like, they have masks on and stuff. And I was sitting there being like, ooh, they are kind of terrifying.
Oh, it'd be like, horrifying. It'd be so scary.
So, like, I would definitely have been one of those guys who took the early shot and then been the cause of the whole line falling apart.
Yeah, yeah. I wouldn't have taken the shot. I'm dropping the gun. I'm running.
But, yeah, so then we get clearly Tom Cruise's group, the Japanese army, I guess.
Yeah, are destroyed.
Are destroyed.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise is captured and is being taken away by the samurais.
Yeah.
And he witnesses an older samurai who's working for the Japanese army kill himself.
Seppuku-ra.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you know about this?
I think I did, but I didn't know exactly what it would entail.
Right.
And so I was kind of on the Tom Cruise side of things being like, okay, so he stabbed himself and now he's been beheaded. And it was only later when he's talking to
Katsumoto.
And
I'm not going to be able to say all the Japanese names, but I can say some of them. Yeah.
Talking to him. And he kind of explains that dying in battle has way more honor than
going home and dying as an old man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he did this older samurai, because I think they knew each other.
Yep.
They had worked together, I think.
They'd fought together.
Yep. So he gave him that honor and that respect to die on the battlefield in battle.
And it was an honor for him to do it.
Yes.
Like, for him to be able to kill a worthy opponent, a worthy adversary in that way. That's honor as well. I think maybe the key thing in that moment is that Tom Cruise, I don't think, sees the general stab himself.
No.
So
he just sees the beheading.
Sees the beheading. So, like, it's sort of framed and blocked pretty well to sort of, we see more than he sees. And so all he sees is this defenseless older man kneeling and then being beheaded. Whereas we know what else has happened. So, yeah, there are a couple of good moments. I really enjoy the sort of actual introduction to Katsumoto when he shows up and then he sees the white tiger flag.
Okay.
Because that obviously goes to, before we really get into the movie, there's a little bit of a scene where he has this vision of a white tiger and it's like a premonition of things to come.
Oh, okay. I think I must have just missed that connection.
You weren't paying attention from the first minute? No. Yes. So he sees a premonition of a white tiger. And then on the flag that Tom Cruise uses to ultimately defend himself at the end of the battle,
there's a white tiger.
And so Katsumoto is sort of like, oh, there's something here. And like, that's why he ultimately saves Tom Cruise's life.
Okay.
So he's not sure why or what Tom Cruise will be able to do for him. But, you know, there's something there that they should look into.
But yeah, so Tom Cruise gets captured.
Goes
off to the village and is put in the house of the man that he ends up killing.
Yeah, one of the men that he kills in the battle, he ends up at his house and his wife and kids look after Tom Cruise. And I think that the one thing I don't like, or one of the things I don't like about the movie, is like that sort of withdrawal scene where he gets over his alcoholism by just sleeping for a few days. It's not that it's not good and it's not that it's not effective, but it is sort of like, I don't know, I've seen that a million times. I don't really feel the need to see it again and again. And then for me, once he gets over that and starts to explore the village and gets out into this wider world and has conversations with Katsumoto, that's for me when like the movie really sort of starts and really gets interesting.
Yeah, I enjoyed their conversations. Because you could get to see how these two guys who are leaders to their group of people kind of have the same goal in life of being a good leader and like training people well. They maybe just go about things differently, or like they're fighting different people.
They're just on the opposite sides of the conflict. But there's a recognition.
Yeah, they like see themselves in each other in some way.
Yeah.
And so I enjoy their scenes, but I enjoy that their talking scenes isn't a 20-minute conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
I enjoy that it's small little ones and they end up kind of always leaving and never really resolving everything in that moment. But the next time they kind of come back and talk to each other, something's been resolved.
It's just, so, yeah, like, it's just like building blocks, yeah. slowly, you know, building more of a relationship together. Their first scene is great because when he shows up the first time and he's sort of, you know, who are you, all this sort of stuff. And then Tom Cruise is like angry that Katsumoto's leaving. And he's like, I've introduced myself. You've introduced yourself.
Yeah.
That's a good conversation. And you're like, okay, like, can I actually understand that a little bit? You know what I mean? Like, we don't really need to share much more. But yeah, he, like, the village stuff is both like my favorite part of the movie, but also maybe the part that the people who don't like this movie groan at the most, because it does have like tinges of white savior complex. Yeah. I think the movie, maybe this is just my view on it. I enjoy this movie and I want to block that out. I think the movie sidesteps a lot of those issues, but I can understand where people are sort of like, he shows up to this village and he sees their simple yet like highly skilled way of life and he falls in love with it and all that sort of, like, I can understand why people kind of groan at that. But for me, it is like stepping into a new world.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from. The thing for me, I would have found it more dishonest, disgenuine something if he had come in and been like, okay, cool, you guys want to use your bow and arrows, but actually if you use guns, you'll win this.
Right.
Like, if he had tried to like impose his like Western world views and ways, then I would have been like, oh, okay, this now seems like skeezy in a way.
Yeah.
But because he goes and for a lot of it, he's just kind of watching and then slowly starts to kind of join in and wants to train with them. I then also enjoy that, like, they don't take it easy on him. They're like, oh, you want to train with us? Okay, you're training with us then. Like, you're doing what we're doing.
But he's still, well, like, so we'll get to one of my favorite characters in the movie. But, like, he's still an enemy.
Yeah.
He's just a captured enemy. And, like, they don't really know what to do with him. Like, I think he has that line when he's writing in his diary of, like, they treat him like a stray dog. Like, you don't really know what to do with him, but you're not going to be that cruel at the same time. You're just kind of avoid and ignore.
Yeah.
And he's like, that's kind of how they're treating me. And it's sort of like, that's how I would treat him too. Like, who is this guy walking around in pants? What the hell are pants? But yeah, I think that, like, a lot of those scenes, like you're saying with the training stuff, that's where Haruki Sanada comes in, and he's the guy with the sword.
Oh,
he's the guy who leads all the sort of training. He's the real sort of, not to say that Katsumoto is not very good on the battlefield. We eventually find out that he's excellent on the battlefield. But I think Sonata's character
is kind of like the general, he's like the
military guy, I think. He's, you know, he is highly, highly skilled. And there are many scenes where he is not happy that Tom Cruise is here. And he has no problem showing his displeasure.
I was going to say, I think a few times he says, well, do you want me to go kill him or something? Yeah. Like, he just, like, he offers it, that solution a few times.
Yeah. I think he'd be all too happy to have killed Tom Cruise an hour into this movie. But I'm curious, like, which of their sort of training sword fights did you enjoy more? Because there's the one in the rain, and then there's the one sort of half an hour later where Tom Cruise is kind of now integrated a little bit better into the village, and they're actually training against each other.
Oh, the one in the rain where he's, like, first, like, fighting the kids?
Yeah.
The kid one?
Yeah.
I think probably the one later, the one 30 minutes later, because I took it as the guys were there training, he goes and just picks up the thing and is trying to mimic their emotions. He doesn't have an opponent, but he just wants, going back to him studying and learning other people to get, like, figure out how to defeat them better. That's just him being like, okay, so if they're going to do this motion, every time they do this afterwards and stuff, and the guy that you really like then comes in and is just like, well, no, you can't not have a partner for this. So,
you're talking about that one. I'm talking about the one after that. There, I guess there's three. I'm talking about the one after that where they fight to a draw and the two guys are gambling on who's going to win.
Oh, yes. I kind of forgot about that one. Who won that? Oh, they draw.
They draw. So the scene is set up. It's basically Cruise versus Sonata. And then there's other guys off on the side who are gambling on how many moves it's going to take Sonata to win.
Oh, to beat yes.
Cruz. And they go two rounds and the same guy loses every time. And then Cruz takes a moment to really sort of process everything, to think through. And that's when he comes up and the third time through they draw.
Yes.
Which I really like because Cruz doesn't beat him.
Yeah,
because that's true. Sonata's better. Yeah. He is a better swordsman than Tom Cruise is. But the draw is like a happy medium of like, they can both save face. They're both impressed with each other. You know, Sonata gives him the little bow afterwards as sort of like a growing respect. But yeah, I think like it's a
okay. It's yes. a good yes, yes.
3 minute scene.
Yes, it's coming back to me now. Yeah. So do you like that one?
Well, I like the one in the rain more.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I like the one in the rain more because I think the one in the rain is just like, it's maybe the first moment where they see, like they, until that point, they have no sort of respect or anything for Cruz. And like, to be fair, he doesn't, I think, have much respect for them either. Like,
no,
there is very much a sort of like, you're here until the spring and then we'll let you go and you can fuck off sort of thing. And he's just killing his time. He doesn't really want to be there. But that's, I think, one of the first moments where there is a little bit of like, oh, this guy might be interesting. Like, maybe we should bring him in a little bit so we can learn who we're up against. Because I think the key thing in that scene, obviously, is every time Cruz is beaten, he comes back.
Yeah.
And he comes back and he comes back. And so, like, that gives us, again, this is a Tom Cruise movie. Tom Cruise needs some W's.
Yeah.
Until this point in the movie, he was a drunk who lost his only battle.
Yeah, that's true.
He's on a downward slope here. Like, he was captured. It's not looking good for our quote-unquote hero. So we need a moment to sort of understand who he is. And so the fact that he doesn't give up, I think, shows us, like, okay, there's, you know, there's one of our little hero moments. There's one of the little plus ticks that we can sort of say for Algren. And maybe, oh, maybe we do like him. And then I think for the characters in the movie, especially for the Japanese characters in the movie, it is a moment of like, oh, this guy might be interesting.
Yeah. I also enjoy the Tom Cruise character learning Japanese.
Yeah.
And like really kind of maybe after that scene with them fighting in the rain, like he kind of goes all in on the town yeah. or like the village.
Yeah.
And starts to like really watch how people are doing things and what's the training and not just the training, but the meditation side of things and the being slow and being centered and him slowly learning Japanese. I also enjoyed that that didn't happen overnight.
Yeah.
Once yeah. again, like yeah. he picks up kind of a few words and then you get a couple of those scenes where he's with the kids and he's hot and they say the word. Oh, okay. So to yeah. burn then is this.
Is
and,
this. Yeah.
And yeah. so like him making those connections and things I really enjoyed.
And I think because we know that he had already done this with who?
The Cheyenne.
The Cheyenne, I believe, or yeah. He'd already, so like we know that he has this ability to sort of pick up and clue in quickly on languages and whatnot. And yeah, I think like everything in the village, I just.
It was great.
I love. I think that's when like the movie looks its best, you know. Nothing is really happening except like character stuff. Like,
yeah,
characters are kind of just slowly changing, but like because of the way it's all pieced together, it never slows down. It doesn't get boring, nothing like that. We then do get the big fight scene with the ninjas.
Yes.
Where I think this is like, we've been talking about like little moments where there's sort of a little bit of respect or a little bit of whatever friendship relationship between all of them. I think that the fight with the ninjas where they ambush the village, that's the moment where I think the samurai is sort of like, he's okay.
Yeah, because he gets Taka, which is
the woman.
The woman, yeah. The sister.
Yeah.
Into a house with her kids and kind of stands there and like protects them.
Yeah.
And.
But I like that he wasn't going to fight.
No.
He like for the first part of the fight, he was sort of like, I'm going to get these people away and then that's that. Like, he's not really involved until the fight comes to the house.
Comes to the house and he, like, is forced into the fight and yeah. stuff. Like, because yeah. if he didn't fight, they were all going to die.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
My question for you for that scene, though, in your movie world, who always wins between a samurai and a ninja? Like, are they, they're not the same.
Well, I don't think they're the same. I think, you know, it's a good thing that you've asked me. I'm quite clearly the sort of Japanese historian expert on this podcast.
Obviously.
From my very, very basic understanding, I think samurai were more of a, like, your classic warriors. Like, you would meet on the field of battle and you would fight. I think the ninjas were maybe more assassins.
Okay.
Where they would, you know, come out of the shadows. I think that's probably colored by how this movie portrays them. Like, the ninjas arrive in the dead of night. They're quite clearly trying to kill Katsumoto from a distance.
Yeah.
Until that doesn't work. And then they come down and fight. But yeah, that's probably how I would look at it. The samurai thing is interesting. Like, we'll save it for the end. But, like, samurai were like a social class.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't like necessarily a job. It was like a social status, right? So
I took it as a job.
Yes. And we'll save that for the end. So Tom Cruise spends his winter in this village, learns what he can, kind of becomes friendly. Still, like, I think what I enjoyed about the movie was that he doesn't pack it all in at this point to join the samurai.
No.
Like, when they leave and they go back to Tokyo, he leaves them.
Yeah.
And he goes back to the army.
Yeah, he's happy enough to leave.
Yeah. He's like, he was going to take his money and go home.
Yeah.
Until he saw what they were eventually going to do to the samurai. And then he was sort of like, oh, no, I can't do that. But yeah, I like that. Again, maybe this is why I think it sidesteps these white savior things, where it's sort of like, he never tries to improve the village.
No.
By, you know, his own understanding of farming or his own understanding of whatever. He doesn't ever try to improve anything. And it's not like he is won over immediately to the fact of, like, oh, actually, these are the guys, these are the good guys that I should be fighting with. Sort of like, no, like, he does his time. He makes some friendships. He has good conversations with Katsumoto. And then it's sort of like, when the time comes, he's leaving.
Yeah.
He's gonna go home.
Yeah, I really liked that there was, like, a friendship that started, but, like, I never got the feeling like they were all best friends by the time he was leaving.
Oh, no.
Like,
no.
It was just like, oh, yeah, you were here for a few months. Like, you've learned some things. We've maybe learned some new things. Katsumo has practiced his English because what he wanted out of everything. And so, yeah, like, it was just kind of just nice. Like, it was a nice leaving.
Yeah. And then he obviously, Nathan learns what the army are going to do. And, like, in the time that he's gone, they've expanded greatly and they've added more weapons. And
yeah, they now have cannons and, like, a machine gun.
Basically, yeah.
Idea.
And
they look like an army.
They've had more time to train. They've had more time to practice. And they look a little bit more professional. And while he was away, we don't really see some of this stuff. And I guess, like, the movie's not necessarily that interested in it. But there have been some laws put in place to curb the power of the samurai. And it's sort of all these things combined. Katsumoto is captured. He's, you know, probably going to be killed.
Yeah.
And that's where Tom Cruise is sort of like, nah, I think I need to put a stop to this.
Yeah, because he's not willing to give up his sword.
Yeah.
Katsumoto is not willing to give up his sword. And the emperor, who, like, we haven't really talked about.
Yeah, because the emperor is weak as shit. What a fucking loser this guy is.
Yeah, kind of sends him into, like, a prison idea. Yeah. He's captured. And then Tom Cruise comes in and saves him.
Saves him. Rallies the troops. Gets the boys together. Gets the band back together. Unfortunately, Katsumoto's son does die.
Yes.
What a death scene.
But
what,
like, an epic death scene. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That was so...
Yeah. Just insane.
Because once again, he's going up with his bow and arrow against bullets. And so, for a brief moment, I was like, somebody is going to die.
Yeah.
Because it has to happen. I wasn't sure exactly who was going to die. And then when the son gets shot in the back, I think.
Yeah, running across the bridge.
Running across the bridge.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh, it's going to be him.
It's a good pick for
a death.
Yeah, because like you're saying, somebody needs to die. Like, this is a bit of a suicide mission to go save Katsumoto.
Yeah.
Somebody kind of needs to die to really increase the stakes. To that point, like, it's always an interesting decision of, like, what character do you choose?
Yeah.
Because it can't be Katsumoto. It can't be Nathan. It probably won't be Sonata because he hasn't had his full moment yet,
yes.
I think. So the son then becomes sort of an easy choice. And so, like, they just have enough scenes and moments with the son for, like, the hour leading to his death where you sort of, like, you do really like him.
Yeah.
You do really, really like him. Like, he has those jokes where, like, Nathan does something or whatever, and the only English that he really knows is jolly good.
Yeah.
And you're sort of like, this guy's awesome from just two words. You need? And so then he's there where Tom Cruise is learning the Japanese. He's kind of, like, excited to teach him more Japanese, things like that. We then obviously get the scene back in Tokyo where he is harassed by the army.
Oh my God, that was heartbreaking.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a pretty sad scene, but he, there's just enough to really make you actually care that when he does get shot and he does fall, you're sort of like, oh God, no.
Yeah.
But then he goes out.
But so, like, Tom Cruise, Nathan goes and rescues him.
Yeah.
It gives him the moment with his dad. I love that my perception of men is very little words needs to be spoken sometimes. So I love that there wasn't a big kind of, like, I love you, son.
Yeah.
And, like, you've done me this great honor and different things like that. It was all kind of
just through a look. Yep.
And stuff like that. And he helps his son up and his son kind of lets everybody else get away.
Yeah. And then we get to the big, big battle, the climactic battle.
Yeah. Which I enjoyed Nathan talking to Katsumo about the 300.
Yes. Yeah.
Because the minute he brings that up, you're just like, oh, this is what's about to happen. Like, you just know.
Well, it goes back to an earlier moment. Like, I'm not sure if you would have known this at the time. I think I probably knew this through movies before I watched The Last Samurai. But the unit that Nathan was a part of during, I think it's supposed to be the Civil War. The unit that he was a part of, the general, the leader of that unit, was a man named Custer, who is quite famous for riding his men into an absolute massacre.
Yeah.
With, I cannot honestly remember the Native American tribe, but a group of Native Americans just absolutely wiped these guys off the face of the earth. And Katsumoto read about Custer in Nathan's diary, I think, and then brings him up. And Nathan, as a Westerner, sees Custer as this, like, egomaniac who fell in love with his own legend and all of his men died because of it. Whereas Katsumoto, because he comes from a culture and he comes from a place of, like, dying on the battlefield is quite honorable and dying at the hands of your opponents is quite honorable, sees what Custer does
is, like, an honor thing.
Good. You know what I mean? And so that, like, you know, they, I think there's an argument seen between them sort of early in the movie about that difference. So then when he brings up 300, you're sort of like, oh, he's now fully on the side of, like, we're going out in a blaze of glory and, like, we're going to fight to the last man sort of thing. And then I think you're sort of like, oh, fuck yeah. Like, here we go. I will say, every single time that Tom Cruise walks out of the house with the red armor on,
oh yeah,
I do laugh a little bit because he looks ridiculous. He looks absolutely ridiculous. I understand the symbolic gesture of it.
Yes.
And the fact that, like, he needs to fight as one of the samurai sort of thing. Like, it would probably look more ridiculous if he wasn't in anything. Yeah, if he was in his American military uniform.
Yeah.
But every time Tom Cruise walks out, I always see Tom Cruise. I never see Nathan Algren.
Oh, okay.
And, like, in that moment. And so it's always sort of like, what are you doing? Like, you look absolutely ridiculous. But yeah, just, like, what are your thoughts on the final battle there?
I thought the samurais were really clever. I disliked that some of them, you know, die super quick. But then the whole idea of retreating down kind of that narrow valley, road, narrow path.
Yeah, the road,
whatever.
Yeah.
And that's actually where they were going to have their battle. Like, they had planned this all out.
Cut off their numbers.
Yeah. I was just like, oh, that was smart.
Because samurai are smart.
Smart.
Yeah.
And stuff. And so, like, I really enjoyed that. Though, by the end of it, when they know that they've lost because they don't have a lot of people, and the Katsumoto. I knew I said it wrong the last time you gave me a look. Katsumoto. And Tom Cruise, Nathan, kind of are just like, well, we're not done yet.
Yeah.
Like, let's just keep going. And they charge out by themselves, and there's however many people. I'm just like, you guys could have run away. Like, you could have been fine.
No, but that's not the samurai mindset. You never run away. You never run away. You charge out.
I know. But then we get reintroduced to the lieutenant that Nathan had worked with earlier.
Yeah.
Who kind of calls a ceasefire because there didn't need to be any more bullets. Like, it was done.
They had, it is a bit extreme. Like, there's always that moment. I remember the first time when I watched this movie, there was that moment where they're trying to load the machine gun. And, like, they are freaked out.
Yeah.
Because there's not many samurai left, but they are charging full on.
They are, like, a scary presence.
Yeah, they're charging full on. And they're trying to load the machine gun, and they can't get the sort of...
Cartridge, the
magazine of bullets into the gun. And there was a brief moment the first time I watched this where I was like, oh, they're going to get there. They're going to get there. And then they get the magazine in and the gun starts going and you're just like, oh, fuck. Like, oh, my God.
They're not getting there.
They're definitely not getting there. And so, yes, Katsumoto nearly dies, is ultimately happily killed by Tom Cruise.
And himself. Yeah. It's.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, he goes out the way that he wants to go out. Yeah. And Tom Cruise does him that honor. Tom Cruise, you know. We can sort of slowly wrap it up. The movie is wrapping itself up. Tom Cruise goes back to the Emperor.
Well, he lives. I kind of thought he was going to die as well.
He probably should have. But, you know, it is still Tom Cruise. So it's a Tom Cruise movie. But, yes, he takes Katsumoto's sword back to the Emperor. And this time the Emperor finally listens. Finally sort of understands the sacrifice that Katsumoto was trying to make in his name.
Because I think the Emperor looks around the room and now sees everybody in their Western clothes.
Yeah.
And they won this battle with Western
machines,
weapons and machine guns and the cannons and stuff. And he's just like, oh, like, I wanted us to modernize, but we've now kind of, like, lost ourselves in this.
Yeah. And like, that was ultimately Katsumoto's revolution against the Emperor in this movie was a way of being like, we're losing our identity.
Yeah.
We have to fight harder to keep our identity. And so I'm going to fight the Emperor, but not really the Emperor. I'm fighting these other people like Omura, who's ultimately the bad guy of the movie. And then, Tom Cruise, does he go back to the village? Does he not go back to the village? Does he go back to America? What do you think? We're shown one thing.
We're shown one thing.
Do you think that is ultimately what happens?
Well, like, the romantic in me says yes. So...
I think he goes back.
I think, yeah.
I do like, though, that they spend very, very, very little time building a romantic relationship between him and Taka.
Oh, yeah. You get, like, one scene just before he leaves where...
And, like...
I think there's, like, a kiss on the neck or something.
There's it's basically just a hug.
Yeah.
I think if you've watched one movie, you will understand that there is, like, a growing attraction and relationship between the two. We don't really need to see much more than that.
Yeah.
So, like, we get it already.
For me, also, like, he killed her husband.
Yeah.
And,
it's
like...
a little messy.
It's just, like, a little bit messy.
Yeah.
He killed her husband, is now put in her house for her to take care of. Her two sons are there living with the guy who killed their dad.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He then comes out and the dad's out. Like, it's just messy. So, like, I didn't need... Sometimes, as much as a romantic as I am, I don't need a romance in every movie.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of glad that this one didn't really have that. For me, the romance is like him falling in love with the village and the culture.
The way of life
and stuff. So for me, it's not necessarily him going back to her. It's him going back to the village where he's now found, like, peace.
Yeah. As a, like, historian, historical story lover like yourself, does this type of history movie do something for you? Because it's based on...
Is it true?
It's, like, I think it's based on real events and okay. real history, but I don't think anyone in this movie is real.
Okay.
So, like, yes, Japan did modernize, and yes, there were samurai who didn't like it, but I don't think there was a Nathan Algren. I don't think there was a Nomura. I don't think there was a samurai leader named Katsumoto who died on a battlefield to machine gun fire. I don't think any of that happened. But like, the broad strokes of this moment in Japanese history, I think did happen.
It didn't. It hasn't sparked the interest in me learning more in comparison to Killers of the Flower Moon.
Right, okay.
If I'm kind of looking at those two, because they're kind of my, like, last two historical ones, even Marie Antoinette, would I be okay with watching kind of another movie set in this time period that maybe explores it a little bit more? Sure. Am I itching to go out and get books on this and kind of do my own research? Not really.
The Killers of the Flower Moon comparison is interesting because this doesn't ruin the movie for me in, like, any way, shape, or form.
Okay.
I think the movie does have an issue with trying to compare and contrast Algren and his past with Native Americans versus Algren and his present with the samurai Japanese.
Okay.
Because the samurai are not, like, an indigenous people in the same way that natives were to North America. And so we see little bits sort of in flashback of a raid that Algren and Bagley were a part of where they just killed women and children.
Yeah.
And that is, I think we're led to believe that, like, that is what has ultimately sent Nathan to the bottle. And he spends the first hour of this movie drunk because he wants to forget what he has done.
Yeah. Cause I think when it's, like, really quick, but when they get to this little village, I think he turns to Bagley and says, well, they weren't a part of
whatever. Yeah.
The raid or yeah. whatever it was. Yeah. And Bagley was like, doesn't matter.
Who,
like,
cares?
Who cares? Yeah. They're a part of the indigenous
yeah.
community. So, and yeah.
And so, yeah, I think throughout the movie, there are just lots of links to, like, how he feels regret and guilt and shame for what he did versus the natives in North America to his present, where he is now amongst another native population and he wants to do things differently. You know what I mean? He wants to correct those wrongs that he has done previously. The difference or the problem is, and this comes from the samurai expert on this podcast, is that the samurai are not necessarily an indigenous people to Japan in the same way that the natives were. Like, samurai are, like, a social class.
Yeah, you were just saying that.
Yeah. So you would, like, you would get to the rank or the level of samurai, but it was, like, a political thing.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean? Like, they had power within society. They had respect within society. So it's not necessarily, like, a one-to-one comparison. And so it's not really, like, an actual problem. I think people just end up watching this movie, though, and seeing samurai, equating it to Japanese and being like, well, those are Japanese people. But, like, the people that they're fighting were also Japanese people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so there is that moment in the big climactic battle scene at the end where I think, like, Algren and Katsumoto just have, like, a moment to sort of, like, look around at all of the death that's going on. And they do, especially I think on Katsumoto's face, you can read into a, like, we're just Japanese people killing other Japanese people.
Yeah.
And, like, this isn't really what I set out to do in the first place. And so there is that little bit. But yeah, like, I think the movie kind of just glosses over the fact that, from my understanding, the actual reasons behind the samurai revolutions that happened and the samurai battles that happened against a modernizing Japan were because they were losing power and they were losing status within society and they wanted to keep it. And so as Japan modernized, they were being pushed out.
Yeah.
And they didn't like it. So they decided to fight back. It's not necessarily a one-to-one Native American versus samurai thing. Any last things to say about The Last Samurai? Any last thoughts?
No, just that I was kind of surprised by some of the cast. So like I already said, the guy, Tony Goldwyn.
Goldwyn.
Yeah. I was surprised he was in it. Didn't know that. And then Peter Pettigrew from Harry Potter was
Timothy Spall
made an appearance too.
Yeah.
So
he's great. I love him. Every movie he shows up in, I'm always sort of like, oh, great.
Because I think he just plays kind of that goofy character really well.
Yeah.
So yeah, I enjoyed at the end of the movie, we kind of get his look on things because Nathan's given him all of the...
The materials
and stuff. So
I it would be in line to say this about a British character, but like he plays that like slightly ignorant.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like where he's sort of like, oh, like tell me about scalping. I've never quite understood the technique. And you're sort of like, you're a fucking idiot, dude. Yeah. Like they take a knife to your head. Like what more is there to understand? But like ultimately becomes a good character, nice person, you know, on the side of Nathan, on the side of the samurai, and ultimately is like just curious about this world that he finds himself in and just wants to learn more and write a book about it and stuff like that.
What about you?
Again, I think some people that I've read and I've talked to and stuff like that, and I understand that this type of movie is not for everybody. This type of movie is definitely for people who enjoy Braveheart, who enjoy Gladiator.
Yeah.
This fits right in. I think some people see a movie called The Last Samurai with Tom Cruise's face prominently on the poster.
Yeah.
And maybe incorrectly assume that Tom Cruise is the last samurai. I think...
That would have been me.
Yeah. I think like samurai can be a plural. And so maybe this is the rose-colored glasses because I like the movie. I always took it as these were the last samurai. Like all of these guys.
Yeah.
Not necessarily Tom Cruise specifically. But I get it. I understand why people would see the poster and sort of be like, no thanks. I get it. Should we tease next week?
Yeah, I don't think it's a first watch for me.
You think you've seen this before?
I think I've seen it before.
Because this is one movie that Chris liked.
Yeah, and I think he made me watch it.
As all good relationships start out as, we're going to watch this post-apocalyptic, you know, hellscape of a movie. There are lots of lists out there. Like maybe we'll get into it next week, but there are lots of lists out there that would rank this as the best movie of the decade.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's where we'll start our conversation next week then.
We'll see. Until then, we'll see everybody next week.
See you then.